Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everyone. This is Johnny Tan, author of From My Mama's Kitchen, Food for the Soul, Recipes for the Living. Welcome to my weekly From My Mama's Kitchen Talk Radio show. This is a special Mother's Day broadcast. My guest for this morning is Shelley Gitlow. Shelley is the co-author of the feature film Boynton Beach Club. Shelley and I will be discussing her funny and entertaining debut novel, Dispatches from Paradise. The novel takes readers to the family battlefield of three generations of women living together in the sultry city of Miami, pursuing happiness, love, and the meaning of life. Good morning, Shelley. Welcome to From My Mama's Kitchen Talk Radio. How are you doing this morning?
Hey, Johnny. I'm doing great. How are you?
Wonderful. It's a pleasure to have you on the air with me, and thank you for calling in from Miami, Florida.
Where, by the way, it is an absolutely gorgeous day here, perfect, probably about 78 degrees, blue skies, and just lovely. And I'm thrilled to be on the show, Johnny.
Wonderful. Dispatches from Paradise is a delightful read. I have to tell you, you are natural at making this book funny and entertaining. It's sizzling hot, yet down to earth. It's wonderfully written, so congratulations.
Oh, thank you so much. I'm glad you enjoyed it.
Please give us a quick walkthrough of your life from childhood to the present moment.
Okay. Well, I was born in New York in the Bronx, Bronx Hospital, mm-hmm. and grew up in the New York, New Jersey area. I went to public schools through high school. And then for college, I went to NYU. And I started out as a language major. And at that time, my dream was to be an interpreter at the UN. And as I was in college, the 60s hit, and then I got politically involved and decided that I wanted to change the world. So I switched to sociology and psychology. And I also met my husband at NYU, and then I got my bachelor's and then an MSW from Hunter School of Social Work. And then for many years, I worked as a family therapist and supervising family treatment programs. I loved what I was doing, but after a while, you know, working in large bureaucratic systems began to wear me down, not the clients at all. That was not at all the issue. So I preferred to leave the profession before burning out, and so that's what I did. And we moved to Miami, and at that time, my husband, who was a professor, and I decided to write a book together about quality management. And when we started to write the book, it made me recall how much I enjoyed writing. It became a bestseller, and we wrote a few more in that area. But after a while, I decided that I wanted to pursue my real passion, and that's film, because I'm an avid movie fan, and I wanted to try my hand at writing screenplays. So, which I did. But then, of course, there's the matter of getting those made into movies, and that's not so easy. One of my scripts was optioned but never made. Along the way, I had contacted the director, Susan Seidelman, who, you know, did Desperately Seeking Susan and Sex in the City, and she liked my work enough to contact me later on to co-write the film Boynton Beach Club with her. So that's how that happened. And, you know, up to the present, living part-time in Miami, part-time in New York, married for 40 years. I've got a wonderful daughter who also loves books, and she's a commissioning editor in art and pop culture books.
That's wonderful. 40 years. Congratulations.
Thank you. Yes. And 40 very happy, happy years. So.
There you go. Wonderful news. When did you discover you enjoy writing?
You know, it's kind of interesting because I think I always loved words and enjoyed reading and writing from the time that I was very young, and it was all very encouraged in my house, in my home. When I wrote for my high school newspaper, I think that was the first time it really hit me. I got to do some very amazing things, some interviews with some music groups like Peter, Paul, and Mary and the Rascals. I mean, this is going back to, you know, the 60s. And but, you know, I realized how much I liked it. And then when I was in college, I even realized, you know, I liked writing my papers. And when I was a therapist, I liked to do the notes that people dreaded doing. I enjoyed.
Yeah. That's interesting. Did you follow some of the writers that inspired you the most in some ways?
You know, I've always, you know, there's certain writers that I loved back then, Kurt Vonnegut and Tom Robbins, and writers that I love now. But, you know, as a kid, of course, I read, you know, the Nancy Drew books and Little Women and all the typical girl books. But, you know, I think I as I grew and got more education, I guess I started to integrate, you know, reading other people. And there's so many wonderful authors out there.
Right. You obviously grew up in this time where it's really tumultuous for the United States growing up in the 60s and so forth. And, of course, everyone that grows up in their lifetimes, it's very engaging, so to speak. What life's epiphanies moved you to become a professional writer?
Well, you know, I have to say that one of the things that affected me most was when my dad died. I was 26 at the time, and I think, you know, the realization that life doesn't go on forever and that if you want to do something and you're lucky enough to have the resources to do it, you shouldn't let your fear of the unknown, the fear of failure, get in your way and keep you from doing it. So I think that's kind of always informed, you know, my behavior, that it's sort of like, well, I might as well do it. I might as well try because, you know, this isn't going to last. And if I don't do it, it'll just pass by and it'll never happen.
Interesting point of view. Were there particular types of stories that you were interested in?
You know, for me, it's always pretty much about the characters, the people, and their relationships. I don't read a lot of nonfiction. I read mostly novels. I read a lot of short stories, too. I kind of try and alternate those. And I prefer contemporary stories, especially ones with a sense of humor, because I think there's so much darkness out there and there's so many horrible things that people write about, and not that they're not done well, but, you know, I don't always want to be in that space. There's a lot of time I'd prefer to be in a more upbeat space. But I'm also partial to stories set in the 20s and 30s, like in Paris, you know, with the, you know, Gerstenstein and that group. Right now I'm reading Francine Prose's new book called Lovers at the Chameleon Club, which is set in 1932 in Paris, and it's fascinating.
There's something nostalgic about those kind of theme, and, of course, the romance that goes with it. And it's not so much the human romance, but the romance of the place and time.
Exactly. And just, you know, the whole thing about these writers that were living in Paris that time, you know, that's very romantic and very attractive to me also,
Yeah, very interesting.
You know, because as a writer, you're so much by yourself, and the notion that, you know, these people had this group, I mean, that would be, you know, that's something that's really magical, really special to have.
Interesting. Do you catch yourself daydreaming most of the time?
I have been known to, yes. Absolutely. There'll be times when I'll be, you know, sitting in a movie if it's in a part that I'm not particularly thrilled with, and I'll kind of be spacing out into what particular thing I'm writing, and something will hit me. Oh, that's what I need to do, and I'll try and remember it or write it down. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. How about people watching?
Oh, that's one of my favorite pastimes. Yes. You hit it on the nose, Johnny. Yeah. I think as a writer, at least for me, so much of writing is observation. And what you hear and what you see and how you integrate that into your thoughts and your writing process, absolutely. And Miami and New York, both of the places that I live, are just, you know, incredible for people watching. I mean, there's a cafe here. There's a cafe here in Coconut Grove near where I live. And, you know, Miami is a very hot, sultry city, as you've mentioned. And, you know, you just see all kinds of things, and it really does inspire you.
Coconut Grove, isn't that where they made the TV series I Dream of Jeannie? Isn't that right?
Oh, gee, no, not that I know of, but unless maybe there's another Coconut Grove in California. I'm not sure. I never heard that. Now I'm going to have to look it up, Johnny. It might have been, because I think the main character, the guy, wasn't he like a pilot or an astronaut or something?
Yeah, he's an astronaut. Yeah, an astronaut.
Oh, that was probably at the Kennedy Space Center.
Yeah.
So it could have been. Yeah.
That's right. Yeah, yeah. So. Do you use your writing as an outlet to express yourself or to entertain others?
Well, that is an interesting question. I think it's both.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's definitely an expression. And I am my own best audience, I have to tell you. As I'm writing, I laugh and I cry. And you know, so it is very, I entertain myself and hopefully I entertain others. But, you know, really, you know, entertaining myself and an outlet to express myself, yes.
Yeah.
But the best part about having published my first novel is when people tell me that they laughed out loud or they forgot to go to the gym because they were so engrossed in the book. And one of the things that's been kind of interesting and exciting, you know, when you write a book about women, it kind of gets pegged as, oh, it's a women's
mm-hmm.
literature
mm-hmm.
or it's chick lit. But I'm finding men are really enjoying the book, and I think they're surprised. So, you know, that's mm-hmm. been interesting.
Well, I mean, it has a wonderful zing to it. It talks about women and relationships and so forth, and, of course, just the overall entertaining aspects of the book, the storyline, and that's just wonderful. That brings me to the next questions in terms of do you write from an outline or do you let the plot just sort of evolve itself?
Well, I don't know how anybody could do it without an outline, really, or at least some basic idea of how it's going to go. I mean, at least I don't. I definitely want to have – I start, I think, with my characters, and I kind of know who they are, what they're doing, where they're going, where they want to go. And from that, I have an outline of the plot. And then what starts to happen is in my brain, you know, like I was just saying, like I'll be in a movie theater and all of a sudden something will pop into my head like, oh, that's the scene I want because that's going to show that, you know, she wants to get ahead in her job or whatever it is.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I of course, you know, things change and they morph into other things and they, you know, time things get switched around as you're going, but for me, I've got to be organized and have something of an outline at least to begin with.
Interesting. Obviously, writing professionally requires tremendous amount of creativity. How is writing screenplays different from writing a book?
Oh, okay, interesting. Screenplay, which is what I've done most of, actually. This
mm-hmm.
is really my only novel so far. The screenplay, you know, you're not really writing a lot of description. You're actually trying to kind of minimize the description. So you've got to be very concise and focused, and you're really doing, you know, a lot of dialogue, which for me, the dialogue comes very easily. And I think, you know, as you read the book, I'm sure you noticed there's a lot of dialogue in this book. That's because, you know, as I mentioned, you know, I started off being a language major, and I think, you know, my ear, I think that's one of my strengths is that I have a good ear for how people talk and writing dialogue. So, you know, with the screenplay, you know, that's a focus. You know, so, but what I enjoyed about writing the novel was having more time and space to be able to do more description and to get into the heads of these three women, to really, you know, have the time to explore all their feelings and their thoughts and how they're thinking about themselves and each other. So, yeah, that was kind of a really fun thing for me.
It seems like there's some sort of similarities in writing in both areas of discipline. I find that reading your book, you brought in a lot of dialogue into it, and really good dialogue. It really made the book much more engaging.
Oh, good. I'm glad. Yeah, I think that's what I'm hearing from people, that, you know, it's a page turner, and that they're into it. They want to know what's happening to these women.
What is the inspiration behind Dispatches from Paradise?
Okay, well, Dispatches from Paradise actually started as a screenplay, mm-hmm. and it was called Everything's Fine at the time. And the reason I wanted to write this screenplay about these three women was at the time, this is probably maybe about the late 90s, there were not a lot of smart, funny women on screen. And I wanted to get them up there because I wanted to see these types of movies myself.
Yeah.
And it's interesting because things have changed somewhat more recently. You know, you have people like Tina Fey and Amy Poehler and Lena Dunham who have been doing that, and they're wonderful, and I admire and love them all. But the interesting thing, and I wanted to share this with you, I found out about something called the Bechdel test. I don't know if you ever heard of it.
Mm-mm.
Kind of interesting because it kind of proves that things actually haven't changed all that much.
Right.
The Bechdel test, it rates movies on whether they meet three criteria. The first criteria is that it has two named female characters. The second one is that those characters talk to each other for at least 60 seconds and that their conversation isn't about a man. And amazingly, only a very small proportion of films pass this test. And it's amazing because could the bar be any lower? I mean, it's kind of insane. But, you know, maybe that's because female directors only account for about 10% and 15% of the screenwriters are female. So, you know, as the more things change, the more they stay the same kind of deal, I guess.
Yeah.
But,
yeah.
You know, that's the state of the art.
That's very interesting. I mean, there's no doubt there is an industry standard, so to speak, well, standard set by people for their advantage in some ways.
Exactly.
Yeah, when you mentioned about Tina Fey and so forth, yeah, they're wonderful writers, they are very engaging in the storylines and so forth, and now I think there's a tremendous amount of parity between men and women writers. I mean, I may be wrong here, but certainly they're given the opportunity to really succeed.
Yeah, you know, I hope so, and I do think it is getting better. But you know, it's still a man's world. Although I think, you know, in book publishing, I think it may be a little easier for women. I mean, you look at Fifty Shades of Grey and self-publishing and stuff like that, and I think, you know, that's making things a little bit better.
Right, that's true. Please give us a synopsis of the book.
Okay, Dispatches from Paradise, as you mentioned, it's a story of three generations of women living together in Miami, where sex is the city, or as I say, too much is never enough. And it's written in their three distinct voices. So we get each one's take on what's happening in her own life, and also their different takes on things that are going on between them. And there's a lot of wild stuff that takes place in this crazy city, wonderful city that I live in. And what I'd like to do, Johnny, if it's okay with you, I'd like to read a paragraph from each one's point of view, which I think will kind of give your listeners an idea. Okay. So we start out with Liz on her 39th birthday. She declares her life a do-over. And this is how she would describe it. I couldn't stand my cheating husband or that soul-sucking bank job for one more nanosecond, so I declared my life a do-over and took action. Richard was shocked, but surprise, he moved in with his bimbo. And my coworkers were also shocked when I quit, flinging my pantyhose over my shoulder like a bridal bouquet. But with my daughter Darcy, a former drug user, away at college, I was about to fulfill my fantasies of opening an art gallery and learning to kayak. Then all hell broke loose. My hypersexual mother manipulated me into letting her move in, and Darcy quit school and came back home. How am I going to handle the drugs, the sex, and worst of all, the telling me how to live my life? So that's Liz's point of view. Well, then there's her mother, Claudette, who is 55. She had Liz when she was very, very young, and she sees things a bit differently. She says, what a day. First, Liz called and interrupted me while I was frolicking with Alphonse. Then he keeled over and croaked, and his heinous children kicked me out on the street. I practically had to get on my knees and beg my daughter to let me stay with her. She detests me because I have a sex life, but that's who I am, and I'm not changing. Talk about cramping a gal's style. How am I going to have any fun with her around? So, yeah, that's Claudette, and she's quite a character, as you've learned.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's Darcy, who's Liz's 18-year-old daughter, and she just says, OMG, when I went to class and saw my Hotties Gone Wild video playing, I knew it was time to haul my butt out of that stupid school. The only place I could go was home, which seriously sucks. My mom kicked my dad out, not that I blame her because he's a total dog, but the crappy thing is she's still positive I'm using, so she'll be all up in my business. Grandma's here, which is way cool because she'll help me get into modeling, and as soon as I have the bucks, I am so out of here. So the book follows these three women as they try to find fulfillment in their work, their love lives, and their relationships with each other, and they are tearing through the racy clubs in the burgeoning art scene of Miami, and it's, you know, it's a very exciting city. And they eventually grow, change, and accept each other on new terms.
Right, right. The beauty of your setup is the fact that the home is ultimately the home base where you can find comfort from within and the support that you're looking for. When it's all said and done, we're family.
Exactly.
How did you come up with the various characters?
You know, a lot of people will ask me, is it autobiographical? Is it you? Is it your mom? Is it your grandma? Is it your daughter? You know, I think it's a composite. My brain kind of functions that way, and I think, of course, they're not specific people, but there's parts of me, there's parts of my mother, my daughter, friends, cousins, people that I know that have been sort of put together to form these characters. And I guess one of the things I wanted to show in the characters was how typically, I think, in families, from one generation to the next, you know, let's say Liz's mother is sort of this libertine, sort of very, you know, sexual, and then Liz, in reaction, is kind of very uptight, and, you know, then Darcy is in the next generation, and she's kind of trying to put it all together and figure herself out. But I think lots of times you find that in families where from one generation to next, they're reacting to the way the person from the, you know, generation above them was.
Interesting. Were there challenges in writing the book in the sense of having to write it in the three voices?
Absolutely, Johnny. And when I, you know, when I decided to change it from a screenplay to a novel, for some reason it hit me, wow, this would be really great if we could really understand and get into the minds of each of the characters and see it from their perspective. I didn't realize, you know, in my naivete of writing a first novel, how difficult I was making it for myself. So, yeah, there were a couple of attempts that were tossed in the garbage. And but, you know, I got to a point, and this was very, very surprising to me, because I had read and I had seen, you know, Elizabeth Gilbert. I had seen a TED Talk that she did where she talked about, you know, when you're writing, if you just get out of the way, it'll just happen. You just kind of have to let it come through you. And, you know, truthfully, I'm not really that way, and I kind of thought that was always a bunch of hokum. It didn't really, it didn't speak to me. But, you know, when I started, when I did this, after a while, like I said, after the first few tossed attempts, it did come through me. It was kind of like each day I was writing a particular character, I would inhabit her. I would become her to the point where when my husband would come home, he would say, so who am I dealing with today?
I think the man will go with the grandma.
Exactly. Of course. Well, she is a lot of fun, that's for sure.
Oh, that's wonderful. How much of you is really in the book?
You know, I think a lot. You know, I say to you, it's not me. But, of course, there's parts of me in all of the characters. I actually, you know, if you really want to get kind of psychoanalytic about it, it can be viewed that way, because I would say, you know, Claudette, the grandmother, is kind of or the libido. I mean, she's just out there.
Yeah.
She's just doing whatever. Liz is the conscience or the superego, where she's kind of like, you know, the policeman, like, don't do that. You know, it's kind of like when you see in the movies when you've got the angel and the devil. And Darcy, the daughter, is the ego, and she's the one that's trying to integrate all these things and figure things out. And so, you know, that's... Those could be all different parts of me also. And I think of everybody. You know, we've all got all those things going on.
Right, right. I think that's what makes the book enjoyable, entertaining, and engaging, simply because you can see yourself in bits and pieces of this different man or women. It doesn't matter, because we all have that in it. It's that fantasy side of us. And then there's this prim and proper of us. And then there's the... sort of like, well, we kind of live in a la-la land that we follow everybody.
Exactly. That's true. That's true. Yeah, and I think that's one of the things I hope, you know, that it's a very relatable book, that people, you know, pick it up and they feel like they're, you know, this is something that, you know, I can, that speaks to me in the world now. It's kind of a very contemporary take on things.
So true. What was the toughest thing to write in the book?
Well, you know, I think it goes back to the voices again, to make those voices distinct, and to, especially Darcy's voice, you know, because at my age, to be writing as an 18-year-old, that was kind of kind of a tough one. But like I said, you know, I guess I tried to bring myself back to that point in my life and the feelings, because, you know, things change, things are different, there's all the technology, as we were talking about, but, you know, the human feelings and the things that people go through in the stages of their life are not that different. There's still, you know, things that, you know, my grandmother went through, that my daughter went through, and, you know, this is just life.
That's right. There's a certain amount of similarities through generations. They may get refined over the years, but certainly those principles, those core values, pretty much stays the same.
Absolutely, yes. I know, you know, my grandmother, you know, my mom was one of four daughters, so they were four sisters. My grandmother always worked and had four kids, and, you know, this is something that, you know, all, you know, my mother, myself, my daughter, these are all things that, you know, go through the generations.
Right.
This, what is it to be a woman, and how is it to... you know, to work and have children and do all the things that, you know, community things and the things that you want to do as a woman and still have time for yourself. I mean, you know, these are all issues that people struggle with.
So true. And the sense of responsibility. You talked about responsibility for oneself and responsibility for your loved ones.
Absolutely.
Very interesting. Did you have to do any research at all in writing some aspects of the book?
You know, let's see, a little bit of research, but not terribly much. Mostly it was my, you know, stories that I had in my brain, or I'm just trying to think. I don't think there was terribly much I had to research. You know, I think what's wonderful now about being a writer and having to research, it's so much easier than it used to be. So, you know, that's a great thing that's come about.
Interesting. Going forward, where will the characters be in 5 years?
You know, that's something that is kind of a fun thing to think about. you know, it's I'm hoping, and I'm, you know, for Liz, you know, when the book leaves off on a pretty hopeful note for her, so I hope she'll be successful as you know, as a gallerist, having her art gallery. I don't think she will have figured out all her relationships with men, I think she's still probably trying to find Mr. Right, maybe, but less uptight, more secure about herself, not so tough on her daughter, more accepting of her daughter, and probably still protecting herself a bit with her mom, because, you know, she'll still have kind of maybe an arm's length relationship with her, because I don't think Claudette is going to change. I think
mm-hmm.
she'll still pretty much be the same. She's
mm-hmm.
she's pretty set. She likes who she is. She doesn't want to change. And you know, in some ways, that, you know, I admire that. That's pretty gutsy. And, you know, she has survived by manipulating people, and she will continue doing that because it works for her. She'll probably have some more plastic surgery. but, you know, she'll still be the person who's the most fun to party with.
Right.
And
right.
and Darcy, the young one, I think she'll actually make it as a photographer. I think
mm-hmm.
she'll have a much better relationship with her mom. I think she, you know, she may end up to figure out her sexuality or may
mm-hmm.
still be
mm-hmm.
struggling with it.
Yeah.
You know, but who knows?
Very interesting. Well, the book is a journey. It's a life's journey, basically. The interesting part about it is you can mirror yourself or see a reflection of yourself in the book in some ways, in all of us. And you don't have to be from a perspective of what these women are going through, but in life situation, in living.
Absolutely.
And that's
one,
the beauty of it.
Mm-hmm. One of the things that's interesting, too, you know, there are men in the book, but
mm-hmm.
they don't
mm-hmm.
have, you know, a key role as far as,
right.
you know, they're not one of the ones who are, you know, telling us their perspective. But at one point I did think about maybe having a chapter at the
mm-hmm.
end called The Men, where at least they, each one of them would have a little bit of a say. But no, then I decided, no, it's really the women. So,
well, why not?
Yeah, maybe. It would be kind of interesting. Maybe I'll put something on my website about that.
There you go. Will you write a sequel?
You know, people have been asking me about that. I hadn't,
mm-hmm.
you know, really thought about it. But, you know, that might be a lot of fun.
Mm-hmm.
I, you
mm-hmm.
know, I like these characters, and I like the journey that they're on.
Right.
So that's possible. That's possible.
Good. Do you see this book as a movie or a TV show?
Yeah, of course, I would definitely love for it to be a film or a TV show, either
mm-hmm.
either one. And I think it does have all the elements
mm-hmm.
to make it a good one. And as I told you, it did start off life as a film. But, you know, interestingly enough, as I was writing it, you know, so much changed when I wrote the book because of, you know, really getting to know these characters so much better and kind
mm-hmm.
of, you know, being inside their brains that, you know, after I wrote the book, I then went back and I redid the screenplay to incorporate a lot of things that were in the book. So, yeah, I mean, I would certainly see it that way. And I think, you know, it's something that people would enjoy.
As a writer, you're not only the writer, you're also the director. So who would you cast?
Well, yeah, that's always dreamland, you know. But it's fun. It's definitely a fun thing to do. You know, as an aside, just when you talk about being the writer
yeah.
and the director, it's kind
yeah.
of interesting because I know a lot of writers feel that when, you know, directors direct the movie and a lot of time the credit
yeah.
is a film by the director
mm-hmm.
and the writer feels, well, no, that's not really,
right.
you know, it's really my film. And, you know, there's a tendency to feel that way as a writer, but, you know,
yeah.
having done the film with Susan Seidelman and we co-wrote the script
mm-hmm.
and then she of course directed it and it was a film by Susan Seidelman. And And my point of view is it really is the director's film because you write it, but, you know, and maybe you're a little bit involved, and I was,
mm-hmm.
And she was very, very wonderful about letting me be involved. A lot of times the writers are not involved at all once,
mm-hmm.
you know, once it goes to the director. But it really is the director's film because they spend years after it's, you know, after it's shot, which is,
mm-hmm.
you know, a long time in itself and
mm-hmm.
is, you know, that's very, very, you know, difficult to do. And then they spend the time editing it and getting it out you know, distributed. They're so involved for years and years and years. So I do believe that it is their film. I don't have any problem with that. But anyway, getting back to your actual question. Okay. So Dreamcast is sort of, you know, people like Tina Fey, Amy Adams, Kristen Wiig to play Liz. And please jump in here and give me any suggestions because I'm always looking for them. And then for Claudette, our wild grandma, Sharon Stone, Michelle Pfeiffer, Sigourney Weaver, you know, because she's a she's an ex-model, so she's still pretty gorgeous. And and then for Darcy, the younger one, you know, Jennifer Lawrence or maybe Dakota Fanning, or, you know, some people have said, what about, you know, Taylor Swift or Miley Cyrus, or, you know, even somebody like that.
You know. I would definitely go for Tina Fey for sure, because she has that conservative personality, and yet she can be naughty.
Exactly, and she's so funny, and she's so understatedly beautiful. That's really this character who's, you know, been totally outshined by her gorgeous mother and doesn't even realize how wonderful and beautiful she is.
That's true. And then I would go with Sharon Stone simply because there's a certain amount of persona kind of thing where she's that confident, and yet we all have our own sense of insecurity inside, but then on the outside, like, hey, I'm in charge.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I think she does. She exudes that, and I think she would just be wonderful. And it's kind of, you know, but it's really how the characters are, because Liz supposedly just looks like her dad and looks nothing like her mom. So, you know, if it's Sharon Stone and Tina Fey, they look nothing alike.
Huge
but
contrast, yeah. It's a huge contrast.
But they're mother and daughter. And
right. Interesting. What would you like your readers to gain from reading Dispatches from Paradise?
You know, as we've talked about, it's funny and beat and fun and that kind of thing. But I think, you know, really what I want people to get out of it is that an understanding that other people, particularly your family members, have other points of view, and that it's so important that if you want to have positive relationships with them, to try and think about that other person's point of view, not just your own point of view all the time. You know, get out of yourself a little bit and see, like, you know, why is my mom so upset about this? You know, I'm upset about it too, but let me just take a minute and see what she's feeling. And, you know, and also that people can and do change, whether, you know, they do it through therapy, through maturing, through reaction to crises. You know, people are capable of change. You know, a lot of time we think, okay, people, they are who they are, they're never going to change. But, you know, people do change. And the people who are close to them should be able to recognize it, and they need to recognize it and stop pigeonholing them, you know, into like this is what she like when she was a kid, you know, and reacting to them and their old behavior instead of who the new version of them.
Right.
Them.
So true. We go through phases in our lives because we go through what I consider as being funny, in the sense that we start out learning, and then when we hit puberty, all of a sudden, we found enlightenment, and we know it all.
Right.
And then somewhere along the line, in the 30s or mid-30s, you realize that, my God, I don't know squat. I don't know anything at all.
That's so true. And, you know, I think one of the things that contributes to you feeling that you don't know squat is when you have a child, and you kind of... And you also realize how vulnerable we all are as human beings. You know, we take so much for granted. But, that is so true.
Where can someone go to buy your book, get more information about you, and keep up with your latest happenings?
Okay, well, I've got a website, which is simple enough. It's shellygitlow.com. And there's information on, you know, events and things in the media and stuff like that. Also, there's links to, you can buy the book at Books and Books, which Books and Books Press is who published my book, and they are a wonderful independent bookstore. Well, actually, I was going to say in Miami, but not only just in Miami, because they have a store in the Cayman Islands, and they have a store in West Hampton Beach, which actually I'm going to be doing an event there this summer on July 13th for anybody that's going to be around. That should be a lot of fun. So Books and Books is a place to buy the book. They'll send it to you with no postage. Also, of course, Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and IndieBound. Those are all places that will be able to get you the book.
Fantastic. We are talking about Mother's Day and so forth, and the fact that you've been a daughter, a mother, and so forth. Let's talk about that for a minute. What is your favorite moment being a daughter?
Favorite moment being a daughter? I guess, you know, I was so lucky. My mom passed away, not lucky that she passed away, 2 years ago, but I was so lucky to have a wonderful, caring, loving, warm, supportive, you know, mother who provided unconditional love. So I know I was just so lucky. So that's why it's hard for me to narrow down to one particular moment, because I would say my whole life, you know, my mom was there for me. And, you know, especially, in, you know, with my writing, and she was so proud when the movie Boynton Beach Club came out, and she had, you know, if anywhere she went, she was telling people to go and see the movie and bragging about it. And, you know, that's all I can say, Johnny, because it's really impossible for me to pick out a specific moment. Although also, you know, I have to say when my daughter was born, and she and my mom had just an incredible, beautiful relationship. And at that time, we were living full time in Miami. My mom was in New Jersey, and she would call and she would say, you know, it hurts my heart. I have an ache. I want to see the baby so much. So I know I'm lucky. I know I've been extremely lucky that way.
Fantastic. That's interesting. How about your favorite moment being a mother?
Well, boy, you know, that's the same thing, too, because it just goes on and on. I'm so lucky and so proud of my daughter. Although a sweet moment I can share, when she went off to college, she actually went to NYU also, because she, you know, both her parents went there, and we had taken her there, and she just loved it and knew that that was the place for her. So when she was packing and getting ready to leave, I had a bathrobe that was kind of a flannely bathrobe that I had from New York, but I still had it in Miami. And occasionally she would like to wear it, and she thought it was very cool. So when she was packing up to go to college, I gave her the bathrobe because I, you know, said, you're going to need this more than I do because it's chilly up there. And it was just a very sweet, you know, moment of passing something to her and just acknowledging, you know, that she was moving on to the next phase in her life.
Very interesting. How has writing Dispatches from Paradise impacted you personally?
Well, first of all, I think, you know, one of the things we discussed was, you know, how difficult it is. You know, you write screenplays and most of the time you never get to see them because for various reasons they never get made or, you know, shown or whatever. This, for me, getting this book published was a tremendous feeling of accomplishment. Finally, a finished product, something I can, you know, tangible. I can literally hand somebody my book. You know, they can read it. You know, I can make that connection with people. So that was a really good feeling for me. And, you know, also getting to do all these fun things like being on your show, you know, doing readings. One of the events that I did, which was great fun, which was at the Books and Books store here in Coral Gables, instead of my reading the parts like I did before, I had three actors, three wonderful women who, you know, were involved, and they read the parts. And it was just so much fun. It was just so unusual, and people really responded to it, and it was just a terrifically fun thing for everybody.
Very interesting. What advice do you have for aspiring writers?
I think the hardest thing for people who are aspiring is to actually just do it. You know, it's like that Nike thing, just do it.
Yeah.
And I think you have to – you have to just get up the courage and start. I mean, you start with the first page. It's, you know, it's kind of overwhelming when you think, oh, how am I going to write a 200 or 300 page book? Well, you know, don't think that way. Think about, you know, just starting and doing it one page at a time, one word at a time. And, you know, what's so wonderful now is that, you know, you can always self-publish as an e-book, so there's so mm-hmm. much opportunity to get things read. But the other thing I think that's important that you have to know going into it, you have to love doing the writing, because the at least for me, the rewards have been so few and far between. You have to just love it, because otherwise, you know, it could become very frustrating. You know, you get to the point where even some of the rejection letters that you get are, yeah. you know, are kind of, you know, positive, and this is like a really positive thing. So I'd like to read you one that I got that I think is kind of funny.
Sure.
Okay. So this was from a publisher of a small press, and he said, "Sorry, but your novel did not make our final cut. Having said that, I personally admire your writing skills and your ability to put together a strong, snappy scene and build memorable characters. In truth, it was the theme and tone that pushed us away from your book. Not that there isn't a place and market for over-the-top, high-energy, erotic comedy. It's just not us." So, you know, so that's the kind of thing that even though it's a rejection, and, you know, I have file cabinets filled with them, Johnny. So for people that are thinking about writing, you got to be able to take that rejection. But, you know, you just get to the point where even if somebody says something a little bit positive, it keeps you going.
Yeah. I thought that was a wonderful rejection letter, unfortunately.
Right. Exactly. I wrote him back. I said, you know, this is the best rejection letter I've ever gotten. Thank you.
Yeah. I mean, it was done thoroughly. They obviously read your manuscript and gave a lot of thought to it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It was very impressive. Not just, you know, this doesn't fit into our, you know, slate or whatever. Yeah, absolutely.
Right. That's amazing. What is next for you?
Well, I'm continuing to promote Dispatches from Paradise, which, you know, is still a lot of fun for me, as I said. And I'm finishing up the screenplay because I wanted to be ready to go in case there's any, you know, producers out there that want to get involved, because I want to stay involved in producing the film. I don't want to, you know, it's my baby. I've been working on this story for so long that I'm just not ready to hand it over to somebody else. And so, you know, like when we were talking about who's going to play the characters, I want to be involved in all that. So, you know, that. And then my other hobby, which is also word related, which I've always loved, is crossword puzzles. And one of the things, I'm kind of an addict, and one of the things I'd like to do is learn how to construct them. So I may end up doing a class in that sometime and seeing if I can do that, because that would be a new challenge. But, you know, also, of course, I'm thinking about what am I going to write next, because after a while of not, you know, spending every day writing, I start to feel like, It's pulling me back. I think what is kind of percolating in my brain is a satire that's set in a university, because, you know, there's so many changes going on in universities now. My husband's a professor, so I'm kind of, you know, aware of a lot of that, you know, as far as, you know, what's going to happen with all the online and all these, you know, open enrollment courses that they're doing. How is that going to affect the university? And also, you know, the university in a way has become very much like a star system. Like there are stars that are brought in at huge salaries, and how that affects the other people and the goings on at the schools. So that's kind of what's percolating. I'm not quite sure if it'll be a novel or a film or maybe both. So
that's interesting that you're able to switch gears from one style of writing, I guess, theme-wise, to the other, and being able to blend all of it in a very sort of unique way, I guess.
Yeah, I think I like to write in, about different things. I mean, some of the screenplays I've written have been, you know, very different. I've written a romantic comedy. That one's about a therapist who works with a group of kids whose parents are divorced, and of course he's commitment phobic, and so he's probably the worst person to be helping these kids. But of course, he learns as well as they do as they go on. And then I wrote another screenplay, which was really this one I did a lot of research for. This one is based on my father-in-law's experiences in World War II. He was stationed in New Guinea, and he had some very, very interesting experiences there. And he also wrote his doctoral dissertation on one of the tribes there, on the economics of the tribe. And so this screenplay was really fascinating for me. You know, it was kind of like watching or reading National Geographic and learning all about the tribe and putting that to screenplay. So, you know, I like to do different things. I'm a Gemini, and so, you know, I get bored easily, and I like to keep it different.
Interesting. Isn't your birthday is somewhere around right now, isn't it, for Gemini?
June 15th.
There you go. Happy birthday.
You got it. Thank you. And the other nice thing is that my daughter is getting married on June 14th, so lots to celebrate.
Awesome. Congratulations. That's wonderful
news.
By the way, we're coming close to the end of the hour. Since our show is about people, family, and living life, what would you like to share as a recipe for living with our listeners this morning?
Okay. Well, you know, I'm glad you asked me this question at my age and not when I was 22, because now I think I actually might have something to say that can be helpful to people. I think one of the things I try to do and people should, you know, can maybe get something from, try not to be too hard on yourself or others. You know, we all make mistakes. And I think it's really important to be forgiving. Another thing that I find important is, you know, ignore things that you can't change. There's a lot of things you can't. But if you can, I think you owe it to yourself to be assertive and to be very proactive to resolve any problems if you can. Mm-hmm. I also think balance is really important. It's kind of everything, you know, work hard, play hard, but, you know, maintain balance in your life. I think also challenge yourself. Don't get too comfortable. Try and get out of your comfort zone. Nothing happens if you don't try. You know, you have to put yourself out there. I also think, you know, being true to yourself. Be who you are, not what you think others think you should be or want you to be. And I think finally, you know, just if you can, if you're lucky enough, find your passion and pursue it.
Fantastic. Those are such wonderful recipes for living life. That's amazing. That's wonderful.
Well, thank you.
Do you have a theme underneath everything that you write that you're trying to get across to people as well?
You know, I guess arching over everything is, you know, I like to portray women, and I like women's issues, which is why I think your show is so terrific and your book, and that you celebrate women and mothers. I think, you know, there's still room to make up for a lot of lost time where women's issues have not really been put at the forefront. And so I think that's always in the back of my head when I'm writing. But, you know, like I said, I like to write about, you know, all different kinds of things.
I like the fresh perspective that you bring to the book that you write, your first novel. And I like the fact that when we talk about putting our thoughts on paper or whether it's in a screenplay and whatnot, it is a transference of that living wisdom that we're trying to pass along to someone else.
I think you're absolutely right. I think, you know, that's always back there. And, you know, lots of times there's always things in the back of my head, you know, things my grandmother said, things my mother said, Absolutely, and those things they're still relevant and still important in my life, absolutely.
Yeah, those are core values, principles that you have lived by over the years, and you have tasted a wonderful array of what I consider as life as a buffet line. You have an opportunity to taste it all, and then you process it, and then you put it all out in the beautiful writing that you do.
Oh, well, thank you. I appreciate that. And I realize how lucky I am to be doing exactly what I what I want to be doing at this point in my life. I think being grateful is something that, you know, you feel, I feel it every day, you know, grateful for everything that I have. And I think that's so important because it's so easy to become jaded and to just take things for granted.
Right. Definitely. Gratitude is very, very important in our life. Shelley, thank you for the great recipes for living that you shared with us just now and for spending this hour with me on From My Mama's Kitchen Talk Radio. To all our listeners, thank you for being with us. Please join me next Tuesday morning. My guest will be Suzanne McQueen. She is a career entrepreneur and an author. Suzanne and I will be discussing her latest book, Four Seasons in 4 Weeks, Awakening the Power, Wisdom, and Beauty in Every Woman's Nature. For additional information about this show and future shows, please go to fmmktalkradio.com. Thank you for listening and have a blessed week. Shelley, it has been a pleasure. Thank you again and have a blessed day. And happy Mother's Day to you.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.